We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com. We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
Winter is coming, and the VC climate for gaming companies that was red hot is cooling down fast. You either go into survival mode or you look at alternative financing opportunities. We discussed your options with Martin McMillan, founder and CEO of Pollen VC, a company with a funding solution that finances against receivables. All this and more in episode number 475. Welcome to Mobile Presence, your destination for everything mobile. Capital, it's the essential ingredient for building your company. Without it, you can't operate and grow. And right now, this is not just a worry, it is soon to be a reality as we enter a challenging VC fundraising climate. VC expectations are growing and the investment rate is slowing down. The bar is high, really high. I mean, very high. And you have a choice as an app marketer or an app owner, a gaming app owner. You can go into survival or you can get creative and look at financing opportunities outside of the standard VC pathway. Today, we talk about the alternatives and bust some valuation myths with my guest, and he has really the cred to do both. He has 20 years of experience in launching and building technology businesses in the financial services and media sectors, and he has a previous career as an investment banker. He saw the opportunity early on to marry his traditional financial markets and technology experience to create a new financing model for the app and gaming economy, and that result is Pollen VC. I want to welcome Martin McMillan, founder and CEO of Pollen VC. Martin, great to have you here today.
Thanks for having me on again, Peggy.
And you're coming to us from where now?
I'm currently in Bali in Indonesia. So okay. I'm with my family on 6 weeks of remote working. This is the third year we've done it. It's proving great for the kids and also pretty good for our productivity as well.
And speaking of productivity, probably a little bit of downtime as well to think about what you're doing at Pollen VC. And we'll get to that in a moment because it has been a really exciting year for you. I've been watching the blogosphere. I've been watching what goes on at the events, and you've been at a lot of them. But first, let's go back. Let's go back to the beginning of your career because banking and media, they come together in your career and your company. Tell me one thing that I won't find on LinkedIn that tells me a little bit more about how you started this, because I get the feeling you might have been in this pinch yourself.
It was one of these, I was the guy with a problem type of scenarios. So I had spent 2 years of my life doing a music remixing app. And then through launching the remixing app on the app stores, I came across the problem that we currently solve, which is around payment delays, access to capital, etc. So I took I took the proposition in terms of we needed to access capital that was trapped up in the payment cycles of the app stores and the advertising networks to several different invoice financing companies in the UK. And of course, none of them really could understand what we were talking about because it doesn't follow a normal, you know, send an invoice, Apple pays the invoice type of scenario. So that's where the previous experiences as a banker came in, because what we spotted was basically this phenomenally good credit quality from all these platforms. So the risk is actually very low. And so that was the sort of seed of the idea, if you like. And we use technology to verify exactly what's been earned, and then we lend money against it. So yeah, so it was one of these I was the guy with a problem type of founder stories, and things have evolved since we did our first lending, substantially evolved since we did first lending in 2015.
And you talk about it, you know, problem and solution. You had a problem, you found a solution. Let's talk about that for a moment, because it's a volatile market, obviously. Alternatives to venture capital keep finance flowing. And you have made the move to make an offer. You offer an alternative at Pollen. Unpack that for me a bit. What exactly do you do and how do you do it?
So what we do is we provide what we call revolving credit facilities to gaming studios and app developers. And by revolving credit facilities, this is for the first time introducing debt into the capital mix of an early stage company. So for a long time, most early stage companies would just be reliant on venture capital. They would raise their seed round, a Series A, a Series B, etc., diluting themselves in the process. And with Pollen, what we do is we're providing these credit facilities because we are able to get very comfortable with the credits behind them. So let's say you have in-app purchase revenue and in-app advertising revenue, and some of those guys are going to pay out in 30 days after the sale, some in 60, some up to 90 days later. So money is sitting there trapped in the payment cycles of these platforms. And what we do is we digitally verify that every day, and then we give you a line of credit to borrow against that money. So essentially, for us, it's relatively low risk because we're taking risk that the platforms won't pay out, which is obviously a good risk, but it gives the studios very early access to capital, and they can roll this into user acquisition and use it as a very efficient way to grow without having to raise additional equity every time. Now, this isn't to say that studios shouldn't raise equity. Absolutely, they should. This is just introducing, if you like, a mix of capital, so some debt and some equity, into the overall mix, depending on the risk profile of what the capital is going to be used for.
It's interesting that you're talking about a mix when actually the marketers themselves, when they're on the show, they're talking about a media mix and blended metrics, because it's different. It's different now than it was before in UA and in marketing overall. And you've had this solution that finances against receivables. You've had it, as you said, you launched in 2015. Just from your perspective, Martin, you're out there, you're speaking with the marketers, you're speaking with the app companies, the gaming studios. What is the change in the market dynamics that makes your alternative, this alternative, so much more appealing now?
I think firstly, on the user acquisition side, marketers have got way better at understanding the cohort dynamics, and particularly thinking through a more financial lens about cohort P&Ls, how long it takes. And then, if you like, a sort of a yield, if you like, on the user acquisition over time. So I think the financial thinking among the UA community has got better, and the overall financial literacy has got better over the last few years. The other thing that's made a real difference to our business is, as you say, in the start from 2015 until really 2021, what we were doing is lending against the receivables. So this is just the money that's trapped up in these payment cycles of the of the platforms. Now, what then happened was there was a rise in revenue-based lending. So this was basically the VC darling lending business over the last few years, where people say, "I'll lend you money, you put it into user acquisition, and we'll take a share of your revenues until it's been repaid." So there were lots of these companies, very much sort of cookie cutter. propositions coming to market. And that, in a way, really helped us, in a way that the rising tide floats all the ships. So for a long time, we were really pretty much the only ones doing this. And then all of a sudden, you know, there's more noise. It's more talk about non-dilutive financing. But of course, not all financial products are created equally, and revenue-based loans really don't work to fund user acquisition. It's a complete mismatch. They don't work for free-to-play games. It's not a very effective mechanic, simply because the lifetime value of the asset, if you like, the game or the app, does not particularly correlate well to when the loan has to be repaid. So it's a bit like a square peg in a round hole. But it very much got us thinking. It's like, what, you know, how could we use our kind of superior knowledge about how gaming studios really operate? And we came up with this addition to our lending model, which we call residual cohort lending. And the way to think about that is, this is not new users that are expected to be acquired in the future. These are the users you've already acquired. So the way to think about it is, if you press stop on all new user acquisition today, how much kind of long tail expected value in all of your existing cohorts, whether they were acquired yesterday, a month ago, or a year ago, are expected to sort of play out over time? And what we do at PollenVC is we look at these two pieces of collateral to decide the size of the credit line. We look at, first of all, the receivables, the AR, which we've been doing for some time, and then we add on this amount of value that's trapped. And typically, we're able to offer greater access to capital much more flexibly and on better terms than revenue lenders, venture debt providers, etc.
And you're talking about the way UA used to be approached and funded. And of course, that is behind what we've seen is a tidal wave of activity, M&A activity as well. And it's destined at some point to dry up. You've been very vocal, Martin, about what that means, this other phase. Did those acquirers overpay in the M&A boom, I'm wondering?
Look, I think time will tell. Right. And what I think we're seeing just now, and this is, you know, as you said, I've written some posts and done some conference talks recently.
Yes, you have been in the middle of some controversy, Martin. That's why I wanted to hear about it.
Perhaps a little. Right. So all we were trying to do is to point out that, you know, for a long time, all of the M&A has been in a rising market. It's all about, you know, multiples, comparables. Well, these guys went for this much, therefore these guys should be worth this much, etc. And it all gets sort of talked up. And then all of a sudden, obviously, the world has changed over the last few months, and people are getting a lot more sanguine about, you know, whether it's writing VC checks, whether it's the M&A, a lot of stuff has cooled there and so on as well. And people tend to look through a different lens. And so what we were suggesting is basically, like, instead of a top-down framework valuation to, you know, based on whatever, you know, comparables and what everyone else had been sold for, We suggested a framework which was basically on a bottom up, saying, where are the real value drivers in the gaming studio? And it really came down to three things. The first one being, you know, how much value is in these residual cohorts, right? So what's effectively, if you press stop on it all, what's the present value of everything that's expected to happen? So you get to that as a starting number. So that's the first thing. Now, the second part of the framework is all around, how good is my user acquisition machine? What kind of financial returns am I going to be able to make over time? So if I can make, for example, you know, if I've got 2 or 3 year long LTVs on my game, and I'm able to make, let's say, a 5% monthly return on capital in my UA spend, well, that's 60% annualized return. That's a pretty good, that's a pretty efficient machine. And if you can put more and more money into this machine and it still keeps running, then again, you can create a financial framework to value how good my machine is, if you like, and how much I think I can scale on my machine. And those two parts are really the core of how we see a financial buyer. And bear in mind, this is deliberately very much looking through a financial lens. And then in part three, you've got basically everything else. You've got, you know, what's the cross-promotion capabilities of my, you know, if I were to be acquired, you know, can I put a monetary value on that? Then you have the team, you have the culture, and all of these. Now, I'm not, obviously you're never going to talk down, you know, acquiring a studio with a great team, but if you look at the ability of teams to produce hit after hit after hit, it's very, very low. There are very, very few people who can really call themselves hit factories, and this is, you know, this includes some of the biggest names in the game, right? So really what we're talking about is, if you're looking at it through a very, very kind of astute financial lens, then, you know, here's a framework based on these cohorts and the efficiency of the machine to come up with a monetary value that's more defensible in a tougher M&A climate.
And of course, understanding what you have right now for users, that's really important in hyper-casual, because you're not going to have them, you know, the retention curve there is not very long. So, you know, generally speaking, it's like a 14-day. It might be a little longer because they're changing mechanics. We're hearing about hybrid casual. Casual's looking like hyper-casual. It's unlocking the value of users you currently have and understanding that and saying, okay, as you said, push stop right now. What do I really have? At Pollen, are you working primarily with the free-to-play, or is this for all the game genres?
There are a couple of things. I mean, the hyper-casual as a genre, we're seeing less and less kind of interest activities. We're seeing it wane as an entire sector. Every single person we know in hyper-casual aspires to create longer LTV games. Hyper-casual can be a great sort of, you know, one-shot ticket to the moon, if you like, for one game, puts them on the map. But, you know, a hyper-casual studio being expected to create hit after hit after hit is very, very difficult and kind of not very good for the soul. So all of these guys are looking at, you know, how can I create, you know, potentially leverage the success I've had in hyper-casual and create games with longer LTV genres, that they're building more of a franchise, that's something more valuable that someone's going to ultimately pay for. If you look at the M&A, I mean, how many hyper-casual studios have been acquired? I actually can't think of any. Hyper-casual publishers, of course, they have been, but the future revenue stream of a hyper-casual publisher is dependent on how good they are in terms of deal flow, you know, where they get the cannon fodder from lots of different studios to keep cranking out hyper-casual hits, and I think that's getting harder and harder. So everyone's got their eye on creating longer LTV games, building proper franchises where people will stick around for months or years, as opposed to days or weeks.
Well, Martin, there's a lot that games companies have to learn. There's also a problem of financial literacy as well. And we do have to go to break just for this moment, Martin. But when we get back, we'll talk about that problem. We'll talk about how the landscape is changing. And we'll take a look at maybe a surprising example. So don't go away, listeners. We'll be right back.
For maximum customer engagement and retention, choose CleverTap. CleverTap is a leading customer engagement and retention platform that helps digital brands maximize lifetime value. Over 8,000 apps around the world, including Vodafone, Star, and Sony, trust CleverTap to improve user engagement, boost retention, and fuel long-term revenue growth. Learn more at clevertap.com. That's clevertap.com.
Are you looking for the best in WordPress speed, security, and scalability? WP Engine is a digital experience platform for WordPress, powering digital experiences for large brands around the world. With easy-to-use site management tools and powerful do-it-your-way development features, WP Engine gives you the flexibility to build it your way. Improve your SEO and conversion rates with a faster site on WP Engine. Learn more on WPEngine.com.
Miami is more than beaches, palm trees, and fun in the sun. It's home every year to the Miami Book Fair, celebrating its 39th year of hosting authors and readers from around the world, November 13th through the 20th. Join us in downtown Miami at the Wolfson campus of Miami-Dade College. Connect with over 500 authors reading from their books in English, Spanish, French, and Creole, answering questions and signing hard copies. The 2022 edition of the Miami Book Fair welcomes everyone of all ages to come together, meet and make new friends, exchange ideas, and discover one's next favorite author. Let's explore, discover, and learn together. Featured authors will include award-winning novelists Anthony Horowitz, Ben Mezrich, Craig Johnson, Danny Shapiro, Elena Shapiro, Jimmy Attenberg, poet Sandra Cisneros, and authors writing about the trending topics of the day, Lisa Genova, Jerry Stahl, Marie Brenner, Mark Kurlansky, Samantha Cole, Stacy Schiff, Katie Tour, and many others. For more information, please visit MiamiBookFair.com. Follow the fair at Miami Book Fair and join the conversation hashtag Miami Book Fair 2022.
Welcome back to Mobile Presence. We have Mark.
So you've got a business, but what about a brand? The difference? More of you. Wix gives you the freedom to create your website, own your brand, and do it on your own, exactly how you envisioned it. Experience limitless customization. Boost your creativity and efficiency with AI tools for every part of your business journey. Scale up with built-in SEO, e-com, and scheduling features. Put more of you in your business. Go to Wix.com and do it all yourself.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
Kurt McMillan, founder and CEO of Pollen VC. And before the break, Martin, we were talking about what games companies need to know and how things have changed. And what that comes down to is also a problem of financial literacy that Pollen has been addressing. What are you doing so that basically marketers, companies, they need to know when to turn to equity, when to turn to debt? It's a tough call to make. How's it being handled? How are you handling this at Pollen?
I think one of the things we've always tried to do as a company is pay it forward a little bit in terms of financial education. So you get better outcomes when people really understand the financial impacts of what they're doing. Now, in gaming companies and mobile companies generally, there has been a very interesting and kind of unfortunate kind of way that things have evolved, in that there's been almost like there's very poor communication typically between finance leads and UA teams and marketing teams. And, you know, we've always advocated for much, much closer ties and really getting the finance teams to understand the business, the mechanics, the metrics, if you like, of user acquisition, and also vice versa, right? So for user acquisition teams to understand the financial side of it. So, you know, very often what would happen is you would see finance teams allocate UA teams a budget. So let's say there's a budget of, you know, $500,000 for a month, or $100,000 for a month, whatever the number is. And that would be allocated from a budget. And the UA team would go and spend that money to acquire as many high value, high paying users as possible. And really, that's a really very, very old fashioned way to look at it. We've always advocated for, if the finance and UA teams really understand each other's business, then the question should not be, what is my monthly budget? The question should be, first of all, do we as a company have a user acquisition machine? Do we have an investment formula where, you know, with the right capital, we can, you know, we can make sort of predictable, repeatable returns on the capital invested, right? Now, unfortunately, that's where most people fall over and they just can't get those unit economics to work. But for those that can, you know, that's great. And if finance and user acquisition teams are working together, then the next question to ask is basically, well, where can we find capital to feed the machine? And that should just go through a dispassionate stack, starting with lowest cost first, up to higher cost sources of capital. So immediately that starts with your ad network credit line. So if Facebook or TikTok or Google or whoever is prepared to give you 30 days of trade credit, that's like a free risk transfer of LTV risk on you to them. So you should always take it and always keep it maxed out. Next, you have maybe internal cash, money that's sitting slopping around a bank account, maybe from another game that's earning like 1% per annum in interest or something. And you could redeploy that money into a much higher return, putting it through your UA cycle. So you should rationally use that next for, you know, for as long as you've got the capital to do so. And then what people then do is then they turn to, you know, facilities like revolving credit facilities, the kind of thing that we do at Palm DC. And that has got a slightly higher cost attached to it, but it all comes down to cost versus return. If it costs you, you know, 1% per month to borrow money, and you're able to invest that at 15% per month, then, you know, your return after paying for the capital would be 14%. You just subtract one from the other. And then right at the very bottom of that stack, if you've exhausted all the debt options, all of the internal options, and the user acquisition trade is still red hot, then maybe you go out and raise some equity. But hopefully you're doing that on a much higher valuation, on much better terms, because you've been keen to show your VC investors you've been super capital efficient with how you're allocating capital within the company.
So this is a framework or a way of viewing this, a lens through which to view what you need to do, what your options are based on your company. You've also come up with a bottom-up tool and framework to value your actual company. Tell me about that, because that's a fairly new tool in the line of tools that Pollen has.
Yeah, I mean, this goes back to the to some of the conversation about M&A, and it's how it's about, you know, residual value and then the efficiency of your machine. So one of the things we have is we have on our website under our calculator section, we have a whole suite of financial calculators. Some of them are to help you unpack the advertising economics, the ROAS and LTV modeling, and also cash flow modeling. And there's one there, and it's a fairly high level tool, but it's just a tool there that helps you estimate what residual value may be trapped in your existing users. And then you use that obviously as a framework for ascribing a valuation. Now that could be a VC valuation, it could be an M&A valuation, it could be just, you know, for internal diligence. You're interested in how much inertia you've got in the user acquisition flywheel. So yeah, all of these tools there are designed to unpack various different financial topics. Don't require any kind of data feeds or anything. They're just really to help improve financial literacy, because we always see it where people have a greater understanding of the financial dynamics of user acquisition. You always see better outcomes.
Now that tool, that latest tool, that has also been the topic of several talks, several articles. Some raising some eyebrows. It's always good. You know, there's no such thing as bad publicity. Why do you think this is, Martin? What have you touched upon? What nerve have you touched upon?
I've been through in my career a number of different economic cycles. And I think that because things have been so good for so long, people have sort of forgotten a little bit what to do when everything's not up and to the right. So since 2008, we've been pretty much on a very, very decent bull run. In gaming, it was harder until, you know, maybe 2019, definitely through the pandemic and all the rest of it. All of a sudden, gaming companies particularly that were kind of out of vogue, they were seen as non-VC fundable, hits-driven businesses. All of a sudden, the tide massively turned and everyone and their brother was setting up a VC fund for gaming. So there's been lots and lots of VC activity. There's lots and lots of M&A activity. And of course, everyone just loves to keep talking it up, because if you're a founder, you're the investors, you're somewhat sort of biased to do so, if you like. And what we were trying to do there is just sort of just give a little bit of a rain check. So not to, you know, not in any way to kind of be that contrarian or anything, but just to try and put some sort of like some ground zero metrics, because part of the reason is actually to help founders and studios argue against, like, you know, really aggressive down rounds or, you know, kind of predatory M&A offers, right? Now, on the basis something is worth what someone is prepared to pay for it, that's great in a super bull market, talk it up environment. But in a down environment, we figured that founders needed to be armed with some, you know, some tangible financial metrics around their business, so that they can argue from a better position of strength.
So let's stay with metrics for a moment. What metrics do you need to look at? Does a founder need to look at to avoid sending short-term UA costs, you know, into the stratosphere?
So something we've been looking at a lot more recently, and we've realized, you know, as people go out for longer and longer LTV games, thinking that this is a big pot of gold, really it comes down to financial returns and over what profile you're making a financial return, right? So you could have a mid-core game where you're making a 60% return in 6 months, right? So you turn a dollar into $1.60 after 6 months, you're making a 10% monthly return on capital. We always advocate for bring it down to a monthly return. Don't just look at, you know, the 60% return. Does it take me 6 months or 4 years to make that 60% return? Because it's going to make a huge difference how I allocate capital. So we always suggest bringing it down to a monthly return. So let's say I've got a 10% monthly return on capital. That's super solid, right? That's, you know, if you annualize that to multiply it by 12, that's 120% return on capital over a year. Really strong. Now, I think the mistake that some people are making is they're looking at like really, really long-term horizons. They're looking, well, I'm breaking even after maybe 15 or 18 months. So I get my dollar invested in UA, I get it back after 15 or 18 months. And I expect to go and make maybe a 15, 20% return, but it's going to take me 2 or 3 years. So you may find actually those, when you break it down to a monthly return, people are making, you know, maybe 0.5% per month or 1% per month. So when you annualize that and you compare, you know, shorter LTV versus longer LTV, it can make a huge difference. Now, that's not to say you might get some long LTV games that have crazy high monthly returns because people keep paying for ages. But what we're advocating for more and more is to look at your total LTV, subtract your CAC, so you look at your profit. How many months does it take me to earn that profit? So you bring everything back and you rebase everything to, you know, whether it's a hyper-casual game or it's a mid-core or it's a merge game or it's a puzzle game, whatever. Bring everything back to a monthly return on capital so you can compare. And that allows you to make more informed choices across genres because you might think, hey, my merge game's got like a super long LTV. But when you look at the monthly returns, it's actually, you know, you should probably be making different sorts of games because there are better financial returns to be had. So yeah, monthly return is, I think, a super important metric.
You've worked with a lot of companies and probably seen a lot of surprises, you know, where, as you put it, you're looking at one goal, you're seeing one metric, but possibly blinded to the other. You know, you're seeing that this game would be really good, but it's going to take a long time. And of course, in this climate, that's the variable you don't want to play with, you know, because things change rapidly. Can you offer an example of a company that you've worked with and maybe, you know, got back onto the path of seeing it through this lens, you know, being more financially literate, being more focused on what really matters?
I can't give a specific example, but just like contextually, from a lot of different conversations, you know, there's been this sort of like this ping pong. So everyone was interested in hyper casual because phenomenal returns, very short space of time, but it's very difficult to keep up the momentum. So everyone then goes and looks for much, much longer LTV games, puzzle games, merge games. You go from a month to a year in terms of LTV horizons into multiple years. And what we've seen empirically recently is that VCs are less inclined to want to fund super long LTV games that are very, very capital intensive to actually get there. So if it takes you, I mean, you know, if you want to do something at scale, you want to spend $100,000 a day, but your game isn't going to break even until day 400, you're going to need $40 million of someone else's money before your first cohort is even going to break even. So VCs are typically shying away from those sorts of games that require this huge, huge, like, you know, pushing the super tanker out of port type of UA investments and wanting people. I'm not saying anyone's going back to hyper casual. I think that genre is definitely waning. But where you've got more reasonable, maybe 3 to 6 month break-even points, that's more of the companies we're seeing getting funded because that's more of a palatable risk-reward trade-off. You don't have to keep funding for, you know, tens of billions of dollars to see if something is going to deliver. You're going to know if it's going to deliver within 90 to 120 or 90 to 180 days. So I think VCs are looking at those user acquisition horizons in a slightly more sanguine lens than they were maybe you know, 6 months ago or 9 months ago.
Martin, been a very interesting conversation, and above all, really opening our eyes to our options. So with that in mind, I want to move to some rapid fire question answer. I'm just going to throw out a term. You tell me what you're thinking, and we'll do three of them. First one, self-publishing.
Studios need to self-publish if they're ever going to have a hope in hell of selling their studio. Virtually all studios that got acquired in since the beginning of 2020 were self-published studios. Acquirers are not interested in buying a studio where someone else is responsible for getting your games to market. They're interested in acquiring, you know, gaming companies, not talented teams of developers. So it's essential.
That is certainly controversial. I know where you get your reputation, Martin. I'll leave that there because that's probably another discussion in itself. We'll leave that out there for the audience. Number two, break even.
The sooner you break even, the easier your life is. In terms of UA spend, right? It's just, you know, it's a bit like being a farmer, right? If you're say you've got two different ends of the spectrum. One, you've got like someone that's farming salad greens, and you plant your crop, and then you have the hydroponics, and 7 days later, your crops are at market, right? So there's only a 7-day window for things to go wrong. Maybe your hydroponics fail or whatever it may be. Compare that to a longer-term crop. I don't know, maybe something like sugar cane or something like that, where you've got maybe a 2-year time horizon. A lot of stuff as a farmer can go wrong. You could have floods, you could have drought, you could have, you know, people changing their taste for your crop onto another one. So time horizons are really important. The quicker you break even, you get to the lily pad of say, hey, I've earned my money back now. Everything back is gravy. So, you know, obviously depending on genre and overall risk appetite, but basically the quicker you break even on UA, the easier your life becomes.
And not only because I'm a Game of Thrones fan, but you're talking about it so much. The climate is changing, so we will go with that. Winter is coming.
I think it's here. It's absolutely here. What you're seeing over the last few months is stuff is still, all of these deals that have been in the pipeline are getting announced and they're closing. And so the market has been sort of fooled into like, oh yeah, lots of deals are still getting done. Now, of course, deals are still getting done. There's a phenomenal amount of dry powder still tucked up in VCs that has to be deployed. I think it gets deployed in earlier stage companies, in seed and series A companies. It doesn't go into massive mega rounds for user acquisition and gaming companies. And also, you know, everyone's just got a much dimmer view of the world. Everyone's more cautious. Everyone's playing wait and see. You know, where does it land? What's going to happen? And you know, with further recessions in the winter, what is that going to mean for gaming spend, etc.? So I think people are just generally much more cautious. And I think we are, you know, we're in the middle of it, and it's potentially a long freeze as well.
Well, then we have to wrap with this, Martin. You know, you leave me on a cliff here, cliffhanger that it is. VC financing was red hot, but cooling down. Winter is coming. Winter is here. What is your top tip, either as Martin or as Paul and VC, top tip to survive and thrive despite it all?
I think it's probably a bit boring, but it's what, you know, all these VCs coming out with blog posts and playbooks about how to survive the winter and stuff. Just be sensible, right? Don't expect the world to stay as it was. Look at what resources you have, what you need to get through it, and how you're going to survive. Is it the best time to be like, you know, taking big bets? No, it's more important to survive. So look at what you have, conserve your cash, be more capital efficient about how you use cash, how you deploy it. Don't just expect the VCs to be there for you on a phone call like they might have been 12 months ago. Just have some survival instinct and, you know, just trust your gut.
And part of that, of course, is knowing your options, which brings me to asking you a couple questions about how to stay in touch with you, but also where to find the tools and the resources that you offer at Pollen VC. What's the best way to get the best overview?
So from all the tools and content, so we have a pretty active blog. We talk about the financial aspects of user acquisition and running a gaming or an app studio. And we also have a whole suite. I think we're up to 9 different financial calculators now, just under the calculators tab on our website. If folks want to get in touch with me, I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn. So please just reach out to me directly on LinkedIn. It's probably the easiest way to get in touch.
Excellent, Martin. And that's what we'll do. I follow you there as well. Thanks so much for sharing today.
Thanks for having me on the show, Peggy.
And of course, if you have a story to tell, maybe like Martin, some advice, whatever, then reach out to me on social or email me, peggy@mobilegroove. Mobilegroove.com is where you'll find my portfolio of essential reads on the industry and resources for the app economy. You can also check out this and all earlier episodes of our show by going to WMR.fm, or you can find our shows on Amazon, iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, Spotify, and iHeartRadio simply by searching Mobile Presence. And if you prefer video, well, hey, we've got you covered as well, because we have a video podcast of this show powered by The Groove on YouTube. So until next time, remember, every minute is mobile, so make every minute count. Keep well, and we'll see you soon.
The opinions expressed in this WMR.fm program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMR.fm. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.
So, you've got a business, but what about a brand? The difference? More of you. Wix gives you the freedom to create your website, own your brand, and do it on your own, exactly how you envisioned it. Experience limitless customization. Boost your creativity and efficiency with AI tools for every part of your business journey. Scale up with built-in SEO, e-com, and scheduling features. Put more of you in your business. Go to Wix.com and do it all yourself.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.